Senators over there here in a few minutes. Just joking. I'm calling the Senate Health and Human Services meeting to order. We have a long agenda, members, and we're going to start off with Senator Jungbauer, Senate File 1426, the Medical Laboratory Science Professionals Licensure Requirements and Advisory Council Creation. Senator Jungbauer, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Happy to be before you today with Senate File 1426. I'm trying to figure out which delete all amendment. I have some author's amendments here, and I think you have them all. Well, I'm going to start off and explain some things, and then we'll figure out the details of which. We had a couple of delete alls, I believe, here that were negotiated on the bill. So it's the A6. Okay, the A6. I have a big file here. So the A6 is
Senator
the one Jungbauer, that we're
we are
looking
still
for.
Looking for that. Hold on a second.
Okay.
We do not have that yet. So we'll have to.
Well, I have it in my packet.
Okay, I have a number of copies of the A6
okay,
here if someone would like to.
Members, do you all have the A6 amendment, Senate File 1426?
No.
Madam Chair, I have a number of copies, so I'll.
It's towards the bottom of the.
Is it attached in the back?
Yes, way in the bottom.
Way in the bottom.
It's in last night's packet.
Oh.
There's extra that we need them.
I have no idea. A2, right?
A6, it's a big one.
I just handed it.
It's a big thick one, and it's stapled down in the bottom.
I think I'm a no on that.
I'm a no.
Senator Hoffman, would you like to move the A6 amendment? Senator Jumper?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman moves the A6 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Senator Higgins, you don't have it yet? It's quite large.
Fifth page of an A6 amendment.
Yes, I think I have just the first page online. Or how did it?
You don't have it?
Oh. Yes, maybe I had a bunch of different pages
not very
here.
Useful, then.
I thought I was handing things out, but yep. It's only. Okay. So it was.
One second. We got to wait until everybody gets an amendment.
I thought the A6 was in there, and I thought I had extra copies of things, but I guess.
Well, you know what? Senator Jungbauer, we'll move this when everybody has a copy and has a chance. So if you'd like to start, that'd be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, I would like to start. Just so members know, when it comes to licensing, I'm a person that doesn't necessarily believe the government has a vested interest, if it were, in licensing. And so I look at licensing bills very carefully. So when this was brought to me, I looked it over, and I have a background in science, so I always like to look at stuff, and especially, you know, the medical labs, I thought, well, that's a neat bill to look over. But when you look at things and you're starting to think about it as a consumer, when we go to the doctor, when we go to the hospital and what goes on in those labs and when you're getting tested for different things and you hear some of the stories about mistakes, I thought the people in the industry are the ones that really need to tell us and convince us that there is a vested interest in this licensing. But it does. There is a compelling story there that caught my attention in terms of why we would want to know that those folks working in the labs all have similar credentials and all have the same kind of backgrounds. And so that's my vested interest in the bill, and we have people here that know the circumstances and can tell you exactly what the issue is walk you through that. So I don't
okay.
know.
And Senator Jungbauer, the A6 amendment, is there any big substantial changes that we need to know about, or just kind of a cleanup?
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, it was some negotiation on different license classes, and I think that we have, I don't know if there's anybody that's still in opposition to the bill, but it was a cleanup on a number of things, and again, we can kind of go through that. Let's see what I put in my notes. It did. Talk about the licensing date, the occupational titles that can be used, and then different things when you come from other states and designations. So it has a number of different categories and things. Trying to make sure that folks are happy with how this goes. In other words, we're not trying to kick people out of the business that are there today. We're trying to accommodate that, but we want to make sure that when you look at folks that work in the labs, that you can trust that they have a similar background and similar education in the field that they're doing the lab work in.
Okay. So everyone has the A6 amendment? Any questions on the A6 amendment? Senator Hoffman renews her motion. A6 amendment passed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Jungberg, you have Ms. Hansen. Or,
yes,
Dr. Lauren.
After we deal with other issues, Madam Chair, I do have an A7 amendment that deals with the appropriation and some things, too, but I think we could probably move that after we get some testimony.
Okay,
on
and I believe then we're going to need to get that A7. I don't think that's in our packet either. So if you want to pass that out, thank you. Or have it passed out, that'd be great.
All right.
Great. Welcome.
Madam Chair, I'm Kathy Hansen, and I'm the co-chair of a coalition of about 10 laboratory professional associations that have worked on this bill and support it. Why are we here? We feel that licensure is necessary to ensure quality and patient safety by ensuring that laboratory personnel have the appropriate qualifications and competency. Secondarily, an interest of the health department is being able to gather data on the laboratory workforce for emergency preparedness and workforce planning. Nobody knows how many laboratory professionals there are in Minnesota because we don't license them, so we don't have a good way to count them. Today in healthcare, the focus is on quality and patient safety, and in all healthcare professions, the foundation of quality and patient safety relates to the preparedness of the personnel doing the work. This applies to almost all healthcare professions in Minnesota. Laboratory professionals are one of the very few and by far the largest group that is not licensed currently in Minnesota. Over 70% of the objective data used in medical decision making comes from the laboratory, which is not a black box where lab results happen only because of technology. Laboratory professionals test for infectious diseases such as strep, hepatitis, and HIV, cross-match blood for transfusion in surgery and cancer cases, test for genetic diseases, diabetes, heart disease, and many other conditions. Some types of testing are automated, but more and more types of testing require advanced techniques such as molecular DNA-based tests. Incorrect test results may lead to wrong diagnoses, additional expense and suffering, or even death. A couple of examples from the state of Minnesota. Jane Doe works in a hospital lab in rural Minnesota. She has a high school diploma, which meets the federal CLIA requirements, but is not consistent with usual practice in Minnesota. A patient was scheduled for a laparoscopic procedure to investigate infertility and had a urine pregnancy test ordered prior to anesthesia. This individual set up the test and set a timer for the amount of time required before the test could be reported out, but reported a negative result before the appropriate time had elapsed. The mistake was caught by someone else in the lab who heard the timer go off and went to see what it was, and the test was positive. They caught it before the patient had the surgery, which would have jeopardized the pregnancy. In another instance, a patient with a critically high potassium level was hospitalized for treatment. This individual drew the patient and reported a normal potassium result, so the physician stopped the treatment. But someone else in the lab who was looking for a tube in the rack found this patient's tube not centrifuged, not opened, so it had never been tested. The individual had reported the result on the wrong patient, and this patient's result was still elevated. So the physician reinstated treatment, potentially avoiding a cardiac arrest situation. So there are errors that go on every day, especially when personnel are not qualified. The bill defines the routes to getting a license. There's a degree required for each license, some baccalaureate, some associate, clinical experience, and successful completion of a nationally recognized certification exam. We actually have two titles at the associate degree level and six titles at the baccalaureate degree level, which reflects the complexity of the work that lab professionals do. We also, at the request of the Mayo Clinic, defined a subspecialty license for the very specialized work that goes on at the labs there. We do have a grandfather provision so that nobody who's currently working would be deprived of a job. And we also have a provision to recognize the needs of small physician office labs which do testing at the waived and moderate complexity level so that individuals who are certified as medical assistants can do testing there under the supervision of a licensed individual. And renewal of the license will require continuing education, which can be gained on the job and is similar to the requirements of the Joint Commission for Hospitals for Continuing Education for Personnel. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. I think we'll wait for the questions until after Dr. Lauren Anthony. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, I am Lauren Anthony. I'm the System Laboratory Medical Director for a line of hospitals and clinics. When you go to the emergency room with chest pain, you will get an emergency blood test that can show you are having a heart attack even when the EKG is normal. As a pathologist, it is my job to make sure that the laboratory gives you the right diagnosis as quickly as possible. When a child is brought to the emergency room with meningitis, the child has to go through a spinal tap to collect fluid. You may not realize that the only reason to collect that fluid is to have testing by a medical laboratory technologist or scientist. That is the only way to identify the infection. As a pathologist, it is my job to make sure the laboratory identifies the infection for that child as quickly as possible. When a person has an abnormal skin mole, they will have a biopsy to determine if there is cancer. Their diagnosis and treatment depends upon proper processing and preparation of microscopic slides in the laboratory. As a pathologist, it is my job to make sure that the laboratory handles that patient's abnormal skin mole properly so that any cancer that is present will be detected and treated. And today, it is my job as a pathologist to testify in support of licensure for laboratory professionals to make sure that when you have an illness and when you need a laboratory test to find out what's wrong, I have the resources to give you timely laboratory results that you can trust. Why do I believe it is critical to license laboratory professionals? One of the reasons licensure is critical is that there is dangerous incompetence. I worked with one individual in one hospital who mixed up and mishandled patient specimens, reported results on the wrong patients, reported a sexually transmitted disease to the state health department on a patient who didn't have the disease, so think about the consequences of that. And worst of all, we discovered that she fabricated patient results to cover up her errors. Someone putting false medical test results in your patient record, that's something to think about as well. Although this individual could be the poster child for incompetence and dishonesty, this is only one of many examples I've encountered in 30 years of experience. One common misperception about laboratory testing is that a sample goes in a machine and it always gives the right answer. This is false. In Pennsylvania, several patients died because a laboratory technician failed to recognize an error that caused a machine to give the wrong blood coagulation results. At each point in the testing process, we rely on the laboratory professional's judgment, skill, and honesty to provide patients with accurate and reliable results. Another reason licensure is critical is that there is no communication. Let's go back to the individual I just described. Real patients were harmed by her incompetence and dishonesty, and she was fired from that hospital. But it turns out she also worked part-time at a second hospital where I also worked. But there was no communication from Hospital 1 to Hospital 2 about what had happened. The only reason I knew about it was that I worked at both hospitals. Since I knew patients were in danger at the second hospital, I had to fire her. Why was there no communication between Hospital 1 and Hospital 2? Because the first hospital was afraid of getting sued, and with good reason. Because when I fired the employee from the second hospital, I was sued. The employee sued me for defamation in federal court. This was a frivolous lawsuit that was eventually thrown out, but only after wasting 2 years of everybody's time and $50,000 in defense costs. But what worries me isn't the lawsuit. What worries me is where she may be working now. Without licensure, real patients are getting hurt. Hospitals aren't telling and doctors aren't telling because no one wants to go through a frivolous lawsuit. This quote is from the defense brief in my case. One of the most common complaints that lay people have about the medical profession is that no one is willing to step forward and identify substandard performers in the medical environment. This case is an example of why some medical practitioners might be concerned about doing so. Dr. Anthony followed her ethical and moral obligation not to permit the plaintiff to endanger patients' lives by continuing to allow her to perform her job duties with such a reckless disregard for the manner in which tests were conducted, recorded, and reported. Dr. Anthony's reward for doing so was to be named in this lawsuit. Another one of the reasons licensure is critical is that the federal CLIA agency is not prepared or equipped to deal with problem laboratory professionals. When I got sued in federal court, I contacted the National CLIA office for support, and they said, "We can't help you. All we can do is sanction laboratories that don't meet our standards." Another one of the reasons licensure is critical is that the current policy is inconsistent with licensure for other healthcare professionals, such as pharmacists. It doesn't make sense that a pharmacist who dispenses a drug is licensed, but the laboratory professional who detected the disease that the drug is prescribed for or measured the drug level to determine the dose of the drug is not licensed. Another one of the reasons licensure is critical is that other states have licensure and it works well for them. And finally, the most important reason licensure is critical is that it puts the patient first. When you have an illness and when you need a laboratory to test to tell you what's wrong, I want to make sure I have the resources to put you first.
Thank you, Dr. Anthony. Why hasn't this come up sooner, licensure? Is it because of the shortage that's out there for med techs, or is it just the industry itself? What?
Some states have licensure, okay. and it works well. It has come up before. They've been trying to get it licensure here for 5 years, I understand.
Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Madam Chair and members, yes, it has come up before, and it was even interesting in trying to carry the bill, and I always try to make sure that when I bring a bill forward that there's agreement of everybody to try to find some of those things that you do in the back room, so to speak, to talk about the potential problems. And even some of the issues that came up this week in phone calls and emails, it kind of befuddled me, to be honest, because we think about consumers and how we license real estate agents because we want to protect consumers, how we license builders and things. And I'm thinking, people that are in labs doing these tests, and the doctors rely on that and some of the things they move forward, it's about having a consistent education so that you can trust those kind of decisions or a consistent set of rules. So it's not that we haven't tried to bring it forward. I've tried before, but I want to make sure that we're trying to cover our bases, not be threatening to people that already have the jobs, but to be consistent and move it forward and show that it's unnecessary and that government has an inherent role to be involved in that.
And Ms. Hansen, did you have something in response?
No, he covered it. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a number of questions for the testifier, Senator Jungbauer. In your testimony, you made reference to mistakes that were made anecdotally. Do you have any empirical data to show us that licensure would prevent that? I guess I'm not clear to anybody. Maybe it was you. It was your testimony that you told us of a situation where a mistake was made by a lab tech, and I'm trying to figure out how a license would stop that mistake from happening in the future, and if you have data to support that this bill would stop any of those mistakes, and the advanced licensing you're looking for would make a difference. I'm fairly familiar with this area of practice. So,
Madam Chair,
Dr.
Senator
Anthony.
Hoffman and members, I'd like to answer that question because employment law protects employees. Licensure protects patients. So for me to say that somebody is incompetent, to put myself out there and tell another hospital, you can't have this person work here because I have firsthand knowledge she's incompetent. So for me to put myself out there, then that's, you can be sued for defamation as I was, although, as I said, it was thrown out and it was frivolous. So there is an inherent problem where people are afraid to be sued because they don't want to communicate to another hospital that somebody is incompetent. And this is exactly the same thing that led to physician and nurse licensure. If it was left alone only to the hospital, they didn't want it to be known that something bad had happened to patients at their hospital. There isn't communication about that because it could potentially open them up to lawsuits, somebody recruiting for patients who had been treated at that hospital and perhaps harmed by this incompetent person. They don't want it to be known that they had an incompetent person on staff. If I had had licensure in this, for this case, I could have reported this person to the licensure board. They would have been a due process to investigate that person, and I wouldn't have been risk at being sued. And that's a reason that a lot of pathologists wouldn't want to step forward and say that this person's incompetent. It gets passed on to the next patient at a different hospital because they say, I don't want to be sued for stepping forward and saying this person is incompetent. But a licensing board would do follow-up and would give some protection for somebody reporting incompetence. And I think that the current system doesn't allow for that at all, and CLIA makes absolutely no provision for that.
Senator Hoffman?
Well, you didn't really, or thank you, Madam Chair, you didn't really answer my question. If you have the empirical data that shows that this licensure would prevent the kind of mistakes that you're talking about, I mean, we all know in medicine mistakes happen, people get tired, we're human, we get all that, so you didn't really answer my question. And I'm wondering if somebody from the department is here that could maybe tell us how it is currently done. I don't know if there's anybody here that's going to testify to that or if they have that kind of information.
So I did see a hand raised back there. Would you like to come up and answer that question right now? That would be great. He's not moving. Okay, great. Welcome.
Senator, I'm Tom Hendelmeyer, Director of the Health Occupations Program at the Minnesota Department of Health, and under this bill would be responsible for administering the licensing scheme. Could I ask that the question be repeated?
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was, how do we currently handle this type of practice in Minnesota without a licensure? What's our procedure now that this bill would make better? I'm not clear on that.
Mr. Hinkelmeyer.
Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, when there is no licensure, then the state has no direct mechanism for holding individuals accountable to a set of qualifications or standards in terms of education and training on the front end. And then in terms of practice, any ability to correct conduct or discipline unprofessional or unethical behavior.
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what do we do now? What are we doing now? There's got to be some regulation over these folks. I've worked in hospitals. How do people just off the street can come in? Is there certification that's required? I'm trying to figure out what this bill is going to solve for us.
Mr. Hinkelmeyer.
Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, the laboratories are regulated under federal law and dictate credentials or qualifications for the lab director and a supervisor position and a third position, I don't recall. But almost all the personnel working in the laboratory, it's my understanding, are not regulated by the state or subject to any standards under CLIA.
Senator Junkberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Hoffman. It gets kind of touchy. There's 12 states that went through the licensing, but in doing my research on the bill, I called a couple hospitals that we had known had some issues, and they skated all around it. They were in support of it, but they said the hardest part is you can't take private individuals, and because there's no mechanism to move them forward and do investigations and things, that they're at risk of trying to tell us the whole reason why they support it. And it's, again, I find it kind of interesting because in my line of work doing water and wastewater, I have to be licensed if I'm in your backyard to handle anything that goes out of your house. And, in fact, the pollution control keeps upping the requirements on those kind of licenses so that if something happens to the environment, there's a mechanism for them to control the practitioners. And that's what the hospital said. I relate it that way because that's what the hospital said is the labs themselves are typically licensed. They have a rule. They have the supervisors and things. But there's no way to control the actual practitioners within the lab or file or check things against them without potential liability on everyone's part with in absence of a license bill. That's the reason these other states moved forward to those to handle those kind of issues.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the next question I have, well, there's a number, but I'll start with this one. I have a number of hospitals in my district that are publicly owned hospitals. And if this bill would go through, that would raise the costs in those hospitals. And so I'm curious if you've done a fiscal note on the local impact, the local costs. You know, that I don't see one here, and maybe it's just buried in the pile here, but...
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, fiscal note was done. Typically, with licensure proposals, there is no fiscal impact to local government or to employers because the licensing scheme is paid for by fees of the practitioners regulated.
Senator Jungberg.
Madam Chair, perhaps with that question, we could deal with the A7 amendment because it actually deals with the license fees and the appropriation, and maybe it's a good time to bring that out. And
absolutely. And Senator Jungberg, an A7 amendment should be in front of you, members. It's passed out.
So, Senator Madam Jungberg. Chair, I would also hope somebody would move this forward as an author's amendment as well.
Senator Marty moves the A7 amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion prevails. Okay, Senator Jungbauer.
Madam Chair and members, so if you look at line 1.3 and 1.4, that actually deals with the costs of license and the actual appropriation through the special revenue fund to take care of these issues as you collect licenses and run that sort of thing. And I'll also let members know, just on the personal note, that my license to do your backyard septic and things is well in excess of this fee.
So, how much is that, Senator Tober?
What I'm licensed for by the Pollution Control Agency currently is $400 a
year.
Oh,
wow. Wow. Puts things in perspective, doesn't it? All right. Any questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I understand that the license fees aren't going to affect my local hospitals. But what will affect, and I've worked in small community hospitals, the town that I worked in had a hospital and the population of the town was 2,500. And one of the things that I'm concerned with is four-year grads don't often migrate to those little towns. We've been functioning with two-year grads. We've got technical colleges in my district that put these two-year grads out in these fields. And if we would change to the requirement, and, you know, maybe I didn't get all the way through the amendment here, but if we would change to the requirement to have four-year grads, that will substantially increase the cost to my local hospital.
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman,
Hansen.
There is no requirement in this bill that a hospital employ four-year grads other than the supervisor, which is required to be a four-year grad under CLIA. The testing personnel can be two-year grads. They can do all three levels of testing that are defined under federal regulations, waived, moderate complexity, and high complexity testing. So it does not require those hospitals to replace their two-year grads with four-year grads.
Senator Brown.
And Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, we've also tried to deal with some of the continuing education in that you could obtain that on the job, which is way different than any other continuing education that exists in the state of Minnesota. Again, back to realtors, builders, wastewater people, all that has to be outside continuing education. Legal is outside continuing education. So we have tried to anticipate those kind of costs and allow that to be gained on the job and internally, unlike any other business. So again, we've tried to make this as mundane as possible and yet create a box of requirements for those licensed folks that you could anticipate that folks doing that all had a similar background and experience.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to go back to something that you said earlier, that this delete all amendment was a compromise position. Did you talk with the American Association of Bioanalysts when you developed this?
Ms. Hansen.
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, we have met with AAB a number of times and have tried to accommodate some of their concerns in the bill, particularly those regarding military-trained individuals who are covered under the appropriate licensing category. The one disagreement that the other professional associations and certification bodies have with AAB is that we feel there is a valid difference between the four-year trained individual and the two-year trained individual, which they do not recognize. They feel that the associate degree prepared and the baccalaureate degree prepared individuals are interchangeable, and we don't agree with that.
Senator Jungberg.
Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, actually, if you go through the bill, and I guess in my recap, I forgot to put what lines and sections, but we tried to deal with every organization individually to be sure their concerns were handled. And, for example, even the Mayo had some very unique circumstances in the way they train their individuals in subcategories and things, and so all of that is dealt with in the bill. You know, we heard from many folks, and these folks as well tried to work with everybody. So you're never, and I think I've said this over and over, you're never going to get 100% there with any bill. You can't be perfect. But we sat down and listened to everybody's concerns and really tried to draft this amendment to meet everyone's concerns that we could.
And thank you to you.
I think if there may still be one group that might not be quite satisfied, but we still dealt with most of what was going on. And I think that was I can't even find something in my final notes that somebody that was.
Jan has something in her testimony.
Okay. So we have one more person with the testimony that would address some of those other concerns, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. Welcome.
Madam Chair, my name is Janice Conway. I'm currently the director of the Clinical Laboratory Science Education Program at the University of Minnesota. However, I'm testifying here today as a practitioner. I have practiced as a laboratory scientist in six states across the country. Three of them have had licensure. We know that licensure is not the complete answer, but it is not a total guarantee of quality even with licensure. As we've talked about before, mistakes do happen. We are human. However, the requirements for education, certification, and continuing competence do provide at least the requisite foundation for quality patient care. Without the right people and the right education, quality will not even begin to happen. I want to first address some of the concerns that other people have had about the shortages of laboratory professionals across the nation, and particularly in Minnesota. The reality is that this licensure will only make it more difficult to hire unqualified personnel rather than qualified personnel. Data published by the Health Resources and Services Administration and from the American Society of Clinical Pathology have consistently shown that there are no differences in personnel shortages when comparing states with and without licensure of laboratory personnel. In actuality, the growth rate for laboratory practitioner employment in licensure states is higher at about 24% growth than in non-licensure states at 15% growth. In times of shortage, it's also extremely critical that the one person that you are hiring instead of two is qualified and licensed for that particular occupation. In addition, through the collaboration of providers, employers, and educators, along with MinSCU's Health Force Minnesota initiatives, Minnesota has been in a unique position and has become a model for the rest of the nation with new and expanded accredited laboratory education programs meeting the workforce needs throughout the state. From personal experience, I can say at the University of Minnesota, we used to graduate a class of 25 individuals per year. We are now up to 70 individuals per year and have training sites throughout the state, including some remote and rural areas. Cost factor is another issue that was addressed, and I think that's probably been talked about pretty much here, but I did want to point out that the handout that I gave you or passed out to you earlier is the wage and salary survey from the American Society of Clinical Pathologists that looks at laboratory personnel salaries across the nation and the trends. This has been done for almost 15 years. You will see in that report, almost toward the end, table 3 in there, that of the highest paying states in the nation and the lowest paying states of the nation, only two of them are licensed states for highest paying, three are non-licensed. And again, the cost of licensure and the cost of factors for salaries is based on cost of living in the individual areas. The other thing that that report found is that the highest salaries were primarily located in specialty hospitals, reference laboratories, or specialty care areas. The American Association of Bioanalysts was brought up just a moment ago about some of the issues there. They are the only profession that does not recognize the distinction between the baccalaureate degree and the associate degree levels of practice. I spoke with an individual from AAB this morning, and they do recognize that other states do have licensure. Their personnel are allowed to license within their practice in those other states, and they had, in my discussion this morning, no concerns per se. They were neutral on this process here. The comment that people will use that lose their jobs for this bill, we do have the grandfather clause in place, and so that does recognize people who are current practitioners. Practitioners may leave the state was another comment that was made. That has not been found in the laboratory profession. As a rule, most people stay where they are. They do not do a lot of trans-state travel or even trans-city travel. The concern about military personnel, their military personnel do have a route towards licensure with this bill. It is similar to other state licensure bills for military personnel. And I would also bring up the fact that many military individuals, when combat, et cetera, have a number of medical types of activities while they're in the military, and most of those do have to go through additional education or practice licensure when they get back to the states and work in civilian roles. The comment that associate degree people may not be allowed to do high complexity testing, for Senator Hoffman, we did answer that. That is part of the bill, that they still are allowed to do high complexity testing, that they just have to be under the supervision of a four-year individual as well. And that the bill now includes the aspects of anatomic pathology and cytotechnology and histopathology as well. So today you've heard testimony that the work performed by medical laboratory professionals has a significant impact on patient care and patient safety. There are consequences and there are risks. Laboratory testing is not a black box. There is judgment, there is interpretation that needs to take place on a number and most of these tests. You have actually heard some testimony about the actual unqualified personnel that are still out there. As the baby boomer generation ages and the need for health care and diagnostic testing will also increase, each one of us should be concerned about the individuals performing our laboratory testing and whether we can rely on the accuracy of those results. When the quality and accuracy of laboratory testing plays such a critical role in the care and treatment of every patient, we need to ask why personnel standards would not be necessary for this profession when the work they do is so important to the patient and to all healthcare individuals, especially when other professions, as we mentioned, real estate, et cetera, are already licensed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Conway.
Madam Chair, members.
Any questions? Yes.
Well, also on the licensing, I was told that that fee that I represented before is a biennial fee, which makes it extremely way cheaper than our other professions that we license.
Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. Any questions for Ms. Conway or Ms. Hansen? Senator Newman, did you have your hand up at one time and I missed you?
Yes, Madam Chair, I did have a question. I can wait or go with it at this point.
Okay.
Whichever is your pleasure.
Whatever. No, Senator Newman, whatever you like.
Then I'll just an observation from one of the previous testifiers, Dr. Anthony, where she was talking about a reason for this licensure because she had unfortunately been involved in litigation. The way I would look at a licensing provision is whether or not by providing for licensure it's going to add to the protection of the public. And so far I haven't heard that. I'm not necessarily ready to buy into more administrative costs and size of the government unless we can show that by licensing these individuals we are in fact going to protect the public. To create licensure because of a fear of litigation to me is not really a real good reason to do it. While the board itself may have some type of sovereign immunity from suit, I rather suspect that the persons who are reporting to the board would not have that protection. So, I'm just not seeing the connection there to have the licensure for the purposes of preventing litigation. The one question that I did have on the military aspect, and I'm not sure if it's present in the bill other than on page 11, line 32 through 36 talks about folks who have military training, and when I think of military training, these are people who will not only been trained by the military, but they've actually got some hands-on experience. Then they come home, and they are, in addition to that, being required to obtain an AA degree. I don't know if there's any other. This is just the one I've spotted on military. And I just question whether or not requiring folks coming home from overseas, we've got actual hands-on experience, have been trained by the military, whether or not requiring them to have an additional degree is a wise thing to do. Perhaps some continuing education in some form. But to require them to go back and get a two-year degree, I question. So if any of the testifiers have a comment on that, that'd be fine.
Jan, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Ms. Conway.
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, or excuse me, Senator Newman. In other states, licensure, that is, it's consistent with the other states that do have licensure to date. But I would also perhaps point out that those same individuals in the military who perhaps are medics or other types of corpsmen, et cetera, when they come back to the states or work in civilian life, there is additional education that's required for them to be a registered nurse, or to work as a physician's assistant, or to work even as an EMT, even though they did have hands-on and vetted training in the military as well. So it's similar in that way that the military training, and I have worked closely with the Air Force in their training of individuals, is really a hands-on, but does not include the interpretive process as part of their training as a rule.
Senator Jungberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Newman, the language in the bill is actually language working with the Veterans Department. That's what they wanted in the bill, so they're satisfied with the bill. And I agree with Senator Newman. We don't move licensure forward just for those liability type of issues in terms of protection from claims or lawsuits. So, Senator Newman, I'm sure that you'll help me eliminate a lot of the licenses that the state has today, because certainly the state has no vested interest in most of the licenses that they require today. So thank you.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, thank you. And on that point that Senator Newman's first point that Senator Jungbauer was just addressing, I think Dr. Anthony's testimony earlier is perfect example why we need this, not because of her concerns about liability in reporting on firing a person who shouldn't be performing it, but the fact is, as she pointed out, other professionals in her position are reluctant to go through that because of it, and there is no process to deal with it. I think Mr. Hindemeyer's comments earlier, the state doesn't do anything right now to, they're not really that regulated. And so nobody's there to hold them accountable when there's somebody incompetent. We have no process for that, and that's what Senator Jungbauer's bill is doing. So I think that Dr. Anthony's example is exactly right. When you spot a bad apple in the business, you want to get him out of the business, and that's what the licensing can do. And under the current system, she can get the person fired there, but then they get a job in another hospital, and what harm happens to the patient in the meantime? So I think I agree with you. It shouldn't be done just to protect somebody from liability, but there's no system for getting out the bad apples, and this will help.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Marty. I would indicate that this is a problem that is very, very similar to problems involving hospitals with regard to medical malpractice liability. And that, of course, is, you know, a heavily licensed area. Doctors are licensed. And yet, we had the same problem with the exchange of information within that system that is being discussed here for purposes of liability. So you might be right, Senator Marty. It might help, but I don't think it's going to resolve the liability issue. And I'm not sure that, you know, it's a real meritorious reason for licensure.
Madam Chair. On that, I'm not saying the point of this is to protect somebody from liability. I'm saying the point is to try and get out the bad apples, the incompetent ones. And that's what I think the doctor was explaining in her testimony. She was explaining why it's a painful thing for somebody to go in and try and get rid of an inappropriate person. But we don't have a system as a state to try and do that. And when you have Senator Jungbauer saying for sewage treatment licensure and so on, that's for environmental reasons. This is for health and life and health issues for somebody who may get bad results in a lab when somebody's covering up some of their errors and so on. And I think that's why having a system so that when the bad apple is caught, they're pushed out of the system. And so I think this will help that. I'm not saying it will or will not address any liability issues.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Newman, I want to kind of get it back on track where I think my reasoning for authoring the bill is not about the liability. It's not about that. It is as a consumer and even as a doctor, you should be able to expect that people in the federal government require certain lead-type people with certain education to run the laboratory and certain conditions in order to license a laboratory. We as consumers and as doctors, you should be able to understand that people performing certain tests all have the same type of background, so you're going to get a consistent testing in knowing those kind of issues that you may be going through that do indicate life or death type of situations. So the impetus and the control is about the same type of background and training to do those kind of tests. The offshoot is you create a system whereby if somebody isn't performing up to those levels, you have a channel to be able to report them, to be able to have them come back into line or be able to move them out of the job if they're just totally not suited for that job. That's my impetus for the bill, not because of legal issues. So, and Dr. Anthony can answer her side of that, I guess, as well.
Dr. Anthony, and then we have several more testifiers, so we have to keep rolling here. Dr. Anthony.
Sure. Madam Chair and members, I would like to clarify that I do not speak for a line of hospitals and clinics. I speak as a medical physician and pathologist with experience since 1982 in laboratories. I am a licensed physician in Minnesota, and I cannot go to a different hospital under a black cloud from a current hospital. I can't receive privileges. I have to answer numerous questions, such as, was I forced to resign? Did I resign in order to not have my privileges curtailed? That's what licensure does for that. Is the idea is that it wasn't supposed to be kept within the hospital, that the bad physicians couldn't go from hospital to hospital. I do know that in the current system in this state, that we could have a situation in our laboratory where we would know that somebody is disqualified to do a certain type of testing, such as microbiology or whatever, that patients were harmed and they gave the wrong results, patients were harmed, and they had to be excluded, meaning their privileges were revoked for doing that testing. Yet this person could go to a different hospital and perform that same testing, and it may not be discovered until future patients are harmed. So those patients at that hospital, don't they deserve the same protection of the communication that there may be patients at risk?
Thank you, Dr. Anthony. Thank you, Ms. Hansen. We have Ashley Wong and Shantae Nichols, please. Nope, that's not Ashley Wong. That is not Ms. Wong.
Madam Chair, members, Ashley Wong was here last evening, wanted me to express her deep appreciation for the fascinating discussion on Senator Nienau's bill, but she could not be here today. I'm here in her place.
Madam Chair, Senators, my name is Shantae Nichols. I'm from Cryogenic Laboratories, and I'm here to oppose the Senate File 1426. I work in a lab that specializes in procurement and distribution of reproductive tissue. My background is a Bachelor of Arts in Biology. I'm the site manager and lab supervisor at my facility. Cryogenic Laboratories and other reproductive tissue labs in general were regulated by CLIA, Food and Drug Administration, American Association for Tissue Banks, New York State of California, et cetera, et cetera. We have very clear standards. We're extremely regulated. And in each one of those regulations, they have specific details they need us to follow. We have multiple proficiency testings every quarter, and this bill basically would force me to choose between state law and federal law, and that's not a position any lab wants or needs to be in. It also, this regulation would greatly reduce the number of candidates I'm able to hire. It excludes highly qualified candidates. Other reasons, it's hard to believe that with the economy we want to limit who we can hire for jobs, especially if they're qualified laboratory personnel. This bill also limits staffing, which in turn adds an increase of workloads, increases stress, which in turn is actually provides less safety for patients.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Any questions for Ms. Nichols?
Madam Chair, I'd like to answer part of
yes, Senator Junkbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I believe that it's not accurate in the way it was just portrayed, in that since we give credit for on-the-job training towards this, really the worst-case scenario for a qualified candidate would be that they would have to pay a license fee. So we've anticipated those kind of things. They're in, and maybe you didn't get a copy of the latest version of the bill. It seemed like that those comments probably came from an earlier version. And so if we can get her a copy of the later version, I think you'll
answer. So all the concerns have been addressed that she brought up, Senator Junkbar?
I believe every concern she brought up, but I'm not certain. So I want to make sure that she was working off the latest version of the bill, and I'm not sure. So I don't want to say that all of the concerns have been addressed, but I think we addressed the bulk of what you were talking about in the way we did things. So I'd love to.
I think Mr. Lehman has some comments on that, too.
I have some brief
Welcome
comments.
Welcome, Mr. Lehman.
Madam Chair, Tom Lehman, I'm testifying today on behalf of the American Association of Bioanalysts, which was referenced earlier. And I just want to be clear. AAB opposes this bill, despite the comments that they're neutral. You can check the Campaign Finance Board. I've been hired to work on this legislation. They oppose the bill for a number of reasons. First, I want to say we have not been consulted on the A6 amendment. We did have conversations 5, 6, 7 years ago with the proponents of this bill. We've not had any conversations with them in probably the last 3 or 4 years. So this does not represent consensus. We've had no input on it. Just a couple of comments. One, there's been discussion of quality. I just want to note that in a GAO study by the federal government, 10 of the 11 states that were licensed at the time had higher deficiencies in federal inspections than Minnesota did without licensure. Licensure does not increase quality, as we've heard from other folks. I want to make another point. Only one state has passed licensure in the last 20 years. We've heard that the states have done it. None in the last 20 years. Why? Again, the federal government passed CLIA in 1988. Those of you who are my age or older may remember in the 80s there was controversy around pap smear mills, where labs were set up to do pap smears. There was no oversight, no quality. Thousands of women across the country were getting pap smears and being told inaccurate information because the people running the labs and the lab techs didn't know what they were doing. The federal government stepped in and established a national standard that every state has to apply to the lab, that every state has to comply with. Every lab in Minnesota, whether it's in a hospital, a clinic, or an independent lab like Ms. Nichols' lab, is subject to federal regulation today. There is a standard. There are requirements in place. We know what the rules are, and those rules are in place and working. Again, we have higher quality standards than any of the states with licensure except for one. A couple other points I just want to reinforce. If this is enacted, Ms. Nichols noted she's in violation of state law if she continues to comply with federal law. And let me point that out to you. If you look at the A6 Amendment, line 120, you just pull out the front page of the A6 Amendment, line 120, all medical laboratory personnel are under the supervision, control, and responsibility of the lab director. This says the lab director is in charge. That's current federal regulation and law under CLIA. Turn the page to page 3, line 3.24. Although on the first page, the lab director is in charge, now we find out that medical laboratory specialists can exercise independent technical judgment. They're in charge. They decide what the appropriate test is. They decide the decision, not the lab director, who's qualified to do that under and required to do that under federal law. So in Ms. Nichols' lab, if her medical lab specialists exercise that independent judgment, there's a problem with existing federal law.
It's Senator John Breyer.
Last point I want to make, I'll just make one more point. If you look at line 4.32 in here, again, we had no input on this. It discusses a new category that's not in CLIA or federal regulation, medical laboratory subspecialists. Just a couple comments. It talks about advanced technology. What is that? We don't know. It's not defined anywhere in the bill. Is the lab director or the medical lab specialist authorized to define what advanced technology is? At what point does advanced technology become commonplace among the labs and therefore they no longer need this specialty license? Does the lab director have the authority to define when a test is routinely used? It talks about a test being routinely used. What is routinely? I'm not trying to be arbitrary here. Several years ago, molecular-based testing was specialized and very rare, was done in only a few places a few times. It's now commonplace. What was very rare is now routine. This discusses something that's routinely used. What is that? When does routine become applicable? We don't know. Thank
Senator
you, Madam
Jumper.
Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And just to be perfectly clear, under federal law, the lab is licensed, not the individuals. And there is very clear responsibilities and clear training on the people that run the lab, not the lab technicians. New York passed licensing in 2004. Oregon just passed it, so that wasn't exactly accurate. The sub-licensing and specialized issues, that was from the Mayo Medical Center. They had issues with the bill, and so we put those sub-licensing and things in on the Mayo. As well, members, this has to go to state and local government, I believe, and then probably back here. It has more places to travel. If we've got specific issues, we've tried to deal with it along the way. I'm more than happy to take care of those if we can't satisfy it. I think everybody knows it has worked with me over the years. If we can't get it, we're not going to make everybody 100% happy, but if we can't get it to the point where we stop at least fighting and get neutral, I don't have any problem if we have to not pass the bill this year. We want to get it right, but I want to make sure everything's accurate and portrayed accurately. So we've done a lot of work trying to get there, and we've got more stops before it ever hits the floor. I hope, members, you'll pass it on to state and local government so that we can keep working on it, but you have my word, we'll certainly sit down and do that.
Thank you, Senator Jungbauer. Ms. Greenke, did you want to speak too?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. In light of the hour and your all session coming up and lots of bills on your agenda, I will be brief. I did contact the New York Hospital Association. As Mr. Lehman just had mentioned, it was the last state that I was aware of to have passed this bill. And I just asked him, what is your opinion on how laboratory licensure has worked in the state of New York? And if I could, I just would like to read you a couple lines from their email that I think is very insightful. The rigid requirements that have served to limit the already limited supply of persons eligible to work in hospital labs, most out-of-state recruitment of personnel has ended because of the licensure law and lesser requirements to practice in our border states. There's also a fee for the license and periodic renewal expenses. The Hospital Association of New York State's annual workforce survey of our members continue to indicate that eligible clinical practitioners are in short supply and difficult to recruit. The problem is just going to get worse with time and attrition. The problem was just exacerbated, can't say that word, by the licensure law and the limitations imposed by it. So I can safely say that the healthcare industry experience with the clinical laboratory licensure in New York State has been negative. So from our perspective, that this is a bill that will, in the long run, limit the supply of available practitioners, and it will increase costs over time. Last point on quality, and cost and quality go together so tightly. In your packet, there's a chart and a map that I would like to draw your attention to. It's the Dartmouth Atlas that ranks states based on cost and quality. This is a renowned national study that has states across the country, and on the vertical axis, it ranks states by cost, And on the horizontal axis, it ranks states by quality. I can see you all don't have this. I gave it to Brad. He'll pass it out here quick. But it's a map that shows all the states in the country. And you will see that Minnesota is in the bottom quadrant for costs, which means we're a low-cost state, and we're also very far along on the quadrant in quality. And if you look at the 12 states, maybe now 13, that have laboratory licensure, I did it based on 12, five states had average quality, two states had above average quality, and five states were below average quality. We cannot find any correlation between quality and the licensure of laboratory professionals. So it just in the overall national rankings, Minnesota hospitals are doing very, very well. So I just would like for you to take a look at that and consider that in your deliberations. Thank you.
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, going back to the bill.
Yes.
Page 11, I started looking at it when Senator Newman was talking about the military training piece. And at the top of 11 and the bottom of 11 are two references, professions or categories where you're allowed to substitute military training, I think. So, and the one at the top of the page requires that you have military training and a baccalaureate, and the bottom is military training and an associate degree. So then I started looking at it, and I'm just asking about the construction of it. So starting at the top of the page, there are four numbered requirements for the medical lab scientist. And it's one, two, and three, or four. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So is it 1, 2, 3, or 4? Or is it 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, and 4? In other words,
1, 2, 3. Madam Chair, the way I interpret this, it's 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, 4. So okay. You have to meet 1 and 2. And then either 3 or 4. So, I mean.
Ooh. 1 and 2.
1 and 2. And then you either have to meet 3 or you have to meet 4.
Okay. So then my question becomes, if you look at the language in 4, both the top and the bottom, it requires that you have a baccalaureate, or the one on the bottom, an associate, which is. In 1. And it has met the medical lab experience and training, which 4 seems to say the military training is that. So it's basic, if I understand it right, it's basically substituting the military training for the language in 2. And then I don't know how. So I'm wondering actually what the benefit is of having the military training. I guess is the question is when you parse it all out, it doesn't seem to give you any benefit.
Ms. Hansen,
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, this is intended to be 1, 2, and 3, or 4, replacing 1, 2, and 3.
Okay, then we need to rewrite it.
That's not, yeah.
So that's not the way you've got it.
All right.
The hawk has landed again.
The hawk has landed again?
That's you. Good job.
As long as you just don't call me abnormal like you did last night.
I called us normal.
I thought I had that title.
Is that something, Senator Higgins, that we could continue to work on?
I think Ms. Kavanaugh can probably
sure.
You do it if we just give her a little time.
Oh, I don't know. Is that enough? Senator Jungberry, you have any other comments while we're working on that? Anybody
Madam
else?
Chair and members, you know, quality of health care, we have great quality of health care. That doesn't equal what we have in the labs. Another testifier talked about substandard. That federal designation, of course, would be on the lab, and maybe that's a reflection of the people, but again, lab licensing and the people licensing are two separate issues that should increase the quality there. So when I'm looking at what other people have that I don't have in front of me, you know, I love statistics, so I'm sure I could have a lot of fun with that. But thank you for letting us have the time here again. I want to get this right. I hope you'll let us move it to state government and then bring it back here. That's plenty of time to travel to fix any inefficiencies or mistakes that we have in here. As you rewrite things, you do tend to get things a little bit wrong when you do a delete all. So, members, you have my assurance. If we can't get it right, we're not bringing it to the floor.
Thank you, Senator Jungberg. It clearly says they're still working on it. I would probably advise that we just lay this over and bring it back, if you can wait for a little bit.
Sure.
Lay it over and have a vote on it after they're done. And then we'll move to Senator Benson, Senate File 2147. Excuse me. Civil Commitments, Rule 25, Assessment Exemption for Chemical Dependency Treatment Funding.
And then it seems to be military because you for only these
let
two.
Let me work on this.
Yeah. They're just going to hold it over for after this evening, it sounds like.
Good morning, Madam Chair and
Benson.
This has got to be more.
This is a mess, too.
Thank you.
This is like seven. So that's, I've got to work on that, too.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'll begin by moving the A1 amendment to Senate File.
Senator Benson moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate File 2147 relates to civil commitment and chemical dependency fund access at the federal level. To access federal chemical dependency funds, currently you must complete a Rule 25. This is true for both voluntary and civil commitments. While the civil commitment process is more rigorous, it does not have the fiscal component that would allow it to qualify for Rule 25. So currently, after the civil commitment process is completed, a Rule 25 form must also be completed. We propose streamlining the civil commitment process by removing the full Rule 25 requirement and adding the needed fiscal assessment. I have with me here today Mr. Don
Isles.
Isles? The division.
Don Isles?
Okay. Yes. Don Isles from the Division of Human Services for Anoka County.
Mr. Isles, welcome.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As Senator Benson indicated, my name is Don Isles. I'm the division manager for Human Services in Anoka County. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to address the committee this morning. I would also note that I am speaking on behalf of MACSA, the Minnesota Association of County Social Services Administrators, representing the social service departments in all 87 counties. I'm here today to offer testimony on what I believe is a proposal that would greatly streamline our current procedures.
Senator Higgins, yes, could you please move that a little bit closer, Mr. Isles? Yep, we have gaps here.
Thank you.
And tip it up towards you.
I'm here today to offer testimony on what I believe is a proposal that would greatly streamline our current procedures in regard to the Rule 25 publicly funded chemical dependency assessment process and eliminate a very significant redundancy in our current procedures. As you are likely aware, the Rule 25 Consolidated Treatment Fund is a primarily state-funded, county-administrated procedure that allows public funding for chemical dependency treatment for those persons who are deemed to be financially eligible. The Rule 25 assessment and referral system generally works well in most circumstances. Today, if a financially eligible individual is seeking chemical dependency treatment on a voluntary basis, they approach the county for assistance. Counties have trained staff who administer a lengthy interview and complete an 18-page assessment of the person's alcohol and drug use. That Rule 25 assessment determines if chemical dependency is indicated, and if so, what treatment program is most appropriate. And again, standing alone, the Rule 25 process works well. There is a second process that also results in persons being placed in chemical dependency treatment, most often times utilizing Rule 25 public funding. This other process is this chemical dependency civil commitment process. In these cases, usually the most severe cases of chemical dependency, the person may be ordered by the court through a civil commitment process to chemical dependency treatment. In these involuntary cases, the person who is the subject of the civil commitment proceeding is typically hospitalized or in a detox facility due to the severe nature of their alcohol and drug use. The civil court process, as Senator Benson indicated, is much more comprehensive and rigorous than the voluntary Rule 25 evaluation process. Rather than a single 18-page Rule 25 evaluation, a number of reports are submitted to the court for consideration. These reports are listed in the handout that you received and include reports from medical physicians, psychologists, social workers, collateral contacts, and mental health professionals. In addition, the subject of the civil commitment proceeding is also represented by counsel. Eventually, a judge reviews all of the information and makes a finding. Standing alone, the civil commitment process also appears to work well. The proposal before you today addresses the inefficiency and redundancy that occur at the county level when the two worlds of Rule 25 and the civil commitment process overlap. If an individual is committed through the civil commitment process with all of its rigorous evaluations and reports and court hearings, a full Rule 25 evaluation completed by county staff is still required in order to access state funding from the Rule 25 fund. As a result, county staff are required to again interview the individual who has already been court-ordered to complete chemical dependency. Typically, due to the severity of chemical dependency in these cases, these individuals are normally in either a hospital or a detox facility. And as a result, staff must go to that facility to interview the person. On some occasions, this may also extend the person's stay in an expensive hospital or detox bed. In 2011, Anoka County alone had 61 of these publicly funded cases that resulted from a civil commitment proceeding. The proposed amendment before you today would eliminate the requirement for counties to complete the Rule 25 chemical dependency evaluation on those persons that are court-ordered into chemical dependency treatment through a civil commitment court order, but would still allow funding from the Rule 25 Consolidated Fund for this purpose. Again, I very much appreciate your time and consideration in this matter and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Iles. And you said MAXA is in support. Is there any opposition to the bill?
I'm unaware of any opposition to this bill at all.
Okay. Members, any questions for Mr. Iles or Senator Benson? And, yeah, Senator Higgins, that noise is something, isn't it? Anybody else that would like to testify? We have a couple minutes, but it's a very good bill. It's a common sense bill, I think.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill Amberg, on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Resources for Recovery and Chemical Health, or MARCH, the Drug and Alcohol Counselors Professional Association. Dr. Lofgren was here yesterday and last night hoping to testify. He wasn't able to make it today, so I'll make it extremely brief. We're supportive of Senator Benson's legislation, and we just wanted to point that out to members.
Great. A common sense bill. Is that correct? Any further questions for Mr. Amber, Mr. Iles? Thank you both for testifying, Mr. Iles.
Thank you very much for your time.
Senator Benson?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 2147 to pass to
As amended?
As amended to Judiciary.
Senator Benson moves that Senate File 2147 as amended be recommended to pass to Judiciary. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Congratulations, Senator Benson. And I think we are in recess. We have some fixing up to do with Senator Jungbauer's bill, and so that'll be coming back tonight. And members, we are adjourned till
recess.
Till recess to the college chair.
We got one.